the alpha becomes a worksheet fields. The worksheet theory is constructed from the worksheet fields of the Berkowitz strings are the target space coordinates x theta with its conjugate momentum p, and then the spinor lambda with its conjugate momentum w, and the action to begin with its flat space is just a free action. Left and right movers.
Is there a way to derive this from Green short, or we should think of this as a postulate?
There are some derivations in the intermediate steps. You have to break covariance, basically going through the Lipkin gauge. But the easiest way is to just think of it as you postulate this action and with this BRST invariance. You cannot even see this BRST operator as really coming from a gauge invariance, because normally you will always find some unconstrained ghosts. Now, about this action, there are some problems associated with this new spinor part, because even though it looks a free theory, but the spinors are constrained. And this creates some problems. Also, the first is, you have to deal with the constraints. Then the space of your spinors is a non-compact manifold, and you have to understand what it means to integrate over it. And there are problems in the UV and in the IR, in the UV because it's a non-compact space, well, in the IR, and the UV because it's a singular variety at the origin. When lambda equals zero, this is like a quadric. With the singularity at the origin, and but if you naively do the counting of the central charge, because you know that ABC system of spin 1 and 0 like this has central charge minus 2 or plus 2 if they are commuting or anti-commuting. So if you do the central charge counting from 10 in 10 dimensions, you get 10 from the axis, then you have 16 spinors. Each gives minus 2, so it's minus 32. And the dimension of the pure spinors is lambda, is 11. So you get 22. And this gives 0. So this is a critical string in 10 dimensions. But you can question this counting because, as I said, these are not free fields. So there is a more precise way to understand this, which also allows you to understand how to do multi-loop amplitudes. One other thing I said yesterday was how to compute three-level amplitudes, which involves giving a prescription for integrating at three level over the lambdas, and this prescription amounts to demanding that a correlator only vanishes if it has three lambdas and five thetas in this combination. So this is set equal to 1, and one way to understand it is to notice, or you can compute that this is the unique generator. of the third cohomology of the BRST operator. But at this moment, there is no reason why you should take the third group that goes to number 3, except in analogy with the Ramanelli short string, where you also have 3 ghost insertions to saturate the ghost. Anyway, and to see that this prescription makes sense, you can try to compute to three-point function of the Young-Mitz fields. So you've read the vertex is lambda alpha A alpha, and I wrote the expansion of A before. So you see when you so at first order you have theta, gamma, and lambda. Where did I? Wasn't it somewhere? Oh, it's here. Okay, so you see you have 3 vertices. Each vertex contributes at first order 1 theta. Then with 3 vertices, you have to use also the theta cubed term, which contains the 3 derivative of A, if you just are looking at the gluon. And each will come with a lambda. So to have 3 lambdas and 5 thetas, so you end up with dA. And more precisely, you have this combination. You have A1 dot A2, where this is now the polarization of the external gluon, K1 A3, and then plus cyclic permutations. And now, of course, this corresponds to a cubic term in the Young-Mitz Lagrangian, which is which has the correct form dA A squared from the field strength squared. This term is not there in the abelian Young-Mitz, so you might wonder why the limit of this is supposed to be Young-Mitz, why we find this three-point function, but the point is when you compute the three-point vertex, you have to also sum over all the permutations of the insertions of the vertices. And when you do the sum, you get 0, because the external momenta are on shell. But if you want to compute the closed string amplitude, then you have to square this before taking the sum, and then this sum doesn't cancel anymore, and you recover also the three-point function for the graviton. Or if you do in non-abelian Young-Mitz, then it should be there from the start. Then it doesn't cancel, of course, because of the color factors. And then for the gluinos, it's easier because you see the gluino. The gluino appears already with 2 thetas, so we can saturate the amplitude by taking 2 gluinos and one gluon, and so we get the Yukawa coupling psi 1 a slash 2 psi 3, for example, plus permutations. So at least, okay, this shows that this gives the correct counting of 0 modes at 3 levels to give the amplitude. But now we want to derive this counting, and to do that, we need to understand better the geometry of the pure spinor space.
So there's this maybe at this motivation of trying to recover this scattering amplitudes in this BCJ form. Where can you comment on that? Like the three-point function seems to, but the three-point function is simple. If you do the higher point functions, is it does it appear naturally or not?
No, it's not that it appears. It's not that it appears naturally, but with this allows you to do, okay, I did the computation in components, but you can work directly with superfields. So you can write an amplitude. In the end, you can find an expression where the amplitude is given as an integral over superspace of some some expressions involving derivatives of the fields and so on. So this the utility of the Berkowitz formalism basically that it allows you to work in to obtain superspace expressions directly. I will come back to this later on.
What you're going to tell us now is important to know how to compute the 4.9.
And for all loops and all, because I will come back to this. So first, let me make an observation. These fields are not real, as I said last time. In order to solve this equation, the pure spinor constraint, this equation doesn't have any real solution, so it must be a complex field. But in the formalism, there is no lambda bar, so it should be thought of as a holomorphic. All the expressions are holomorphic in these fields. And in particular, if we want to extend it to curved space, now if we want to write F pure spinor action in a curved space, then here you can have a metric for the target space and the metric will also enter in the target space fermions. But this being holomorphic, this will not see the effect of the metric. So in particular, there will be no correction to this term. So this spinor action, it's only sensitive to the complex geometry of the manifold. Now, one way to treat this problem of the constraint is to first see this expression as only valid locally. So you have this geometry, which is like a cone. With some base space, and you can, if you stay away from the origin, you can choose a patch and choose a parametrization for the pure spinors around this patch, and here you only have 11 coordinates. But then the problem is what happens when you go to another patch and things should be consistent. And now it turns out that this is far from trivial that it happens. For example, to understand what is the problem, suppose you just want to write a free action for a pair of holomorphic fields, but they do not live in the complex plane, but you want them to live in the Riemann sphere, so they live on P1. So there is just one pair of W lambda locally when you are in the first patch, say. You write it as a union of U and U tilde, which are two patches. And then, so you write W and lambda, and lambda is the coordinate on P1. When you go to the other patch, you have another coordinate, lambda tilde, which is 1 over lambda, right? It's just the change of coordinate. Now, what should happen to W? You Naively, you would see W as being the conjugate momentum. It's a one form on the target space, so it should transform as d lambda over d lambda tilde W. So this would be minus lambda squared W. But now what is the problem? If you want to see the theory in the first patch as a free theory, so if you write, for example, T, the stress energy tensor, is W d lambda, and then you would like the stress energy tensor in the other patch to be W tilde d lambda tilde, and you can ask if these expressions are consistent, or even if you want the OP of these fields to be the canonical one, so you have W x lambda y should be 1 over x minus y, and then lambda with lambda is 0, and W with W is also 0. And now if you use this change of coordinate, and you ask if the same thing is true in the other patch, you will find that it's not true. In particular, because of this, you will find now that W is non-vanishing. So what you have to do is you have to correct this expression, and the only way you can correct it, because it's a field of spin 1, and W is the only field of spin 1, so you can add derivatives. So the only object you can add here is a derivative of lambda. And with some coefficient. And you can ask if this coefficient is can be fixed in order to have this. So for P1, the answer is yes. In general, if you have a higher dimensional manifold, you would write something like W tilde I would be d lambda j over d lambda tilde I times wj plus a combination of derivatives of lambda j so there is there are this coefficient bij, and then there are several conditions that you want to satisfy. So the first is, as I said, that the tilde fields satisfy the same OP as the original fields. And then you have a condition that, and this you can always solve, actually. So it turns out that, there is a formula for this B. If I call Gij is this matrix of the change of coordinates, then there is a formula for B. If I write it as let me write it in this way, it's something like there is one piece which is determined just by the change of coordinates, and then there is another piece, mu ab, which if I view it now as a two-form, if I define a two-form in target space like this, then this is this mu has to satisfy an equation which is so the mu is a three-form. This is also a three-form, where I see G in the change of coordinate as a matrix. Then I take the trace, finally. So this is like a Vestumino Victon term. And in particular, so this equation can only be satisfied if this this form is exact, so I can find a mu. And this is one one topological condition that has to be satisfied for the system to make sense. And then there is another condition, is that this is for going from one patch to another. If you have three different patches, you want the change of coordinates to be consistent, so you will get a cocycle condition, which tells you that this psi, now I work in the overlap of three patches, and alpha beta gamma refers to the patch I'm working in, and the mu alpha beta now is the two form which I get from passing from patch alpha to patch beta, and I find the condition gamma alpha . So this three form, it's a two form, but it's also a two chain in the Czech cohomology. So this is an element of H2 of X. X is the manifold valued in the holomorphic two forms. This has to be zero. Psi has to be zero as an element of this cohomology. And one can see actually that this psi is nothing but the Pontryagin class of X. Which is the second term class of the tangent bundle. So in order for the theory to be well defined, one has this topological abstraction that P1 has to be zero. And then we are not yet done. There's still the condition on the stress energy tensor, which we haven't satisfied. So
this is a very generic, very general thing. So any sigma model,
yes,
with a given target space has to satisfy. If you choose your fields to have, so these fields lambda live in this target space, but and you want to improve this OPEs. So the action is just WD lambda.
Right.
Just to make sure.
Yes. Now it turns out that the action cannot be actually just WD lambda because of what I'm going to say now is the condition on the stress energy tensor. So this defines basically a conformal field theory on any complex manifold as long as it satisfies this condition. But it doesn't necessarily have a stress tensor globally defined. If you want the stress tensor to be globally defined, first of all, T, so in a patch alpha, so it's W in this patch. But this is never going to be globally defined. But what you can do is to add an improvement term, and it turns out that you have to where omega it's like a dilaton, yeah, it's exactly. But you take the holomorphic top form on the manifold. In each patch, it's uniquely written like this, the coefficient, the function, and you add this term. So and with this, one can see that T alpha minus T beta is zero between any two patches. So you get a globally defined stress tensor, but then, of course, you want this to be well-defined, and now generally this happens. It means that omega does not have any zero, so a non-vanishing, a nowhere-vanishing top form means that your manifold is Calabi-Yau. So the C1 the first chain class of the manifold has to vanish. And now this is all. Now as long as these two are satisfied, we are we have a well-defined CFT. Now if you want to apply this to the pure spinors, how can you do it? We have to choose a parametrization for this pure spinor space. So the simplest one is to decompose the SO10 into U5. So when you decompose a spinor, an SO10 spinor under U5, you get 1 plus 5 plus plus a 10. So there is a lambda A, where this is a vector index of U5, and 10 is the antisymmetric of of U5. So a way to see this is in a Weyl basis, you can construct, you can parameterize a certain spinor by giving the components as the plus minus eigenvector of a tensor product of 5 SU2, no? So this has, and this is to the 5 is 32, and you get a chiral spinor if you restrict the overall sign to be the same. So there is lambda plus 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 plus, which is invariant under U5, and this corresponds to this lambda. Then next you can have two minus signs, and these two minus signs correspond to this lambda AB, because this AB parameterizes the position of the minus in the sorry, and then four minuses, and this corresponds to this lambda A, which parameterizes the position of the plus. So now this gives a way of decomposing the spinor space in patches. And one thing is, once you do this decomposition, the spinor constraints also decomposes like this. You have comes to equations. So each of this equation has one free vector index E and E. So there are two 5 plus 5, 10 equations, which corresponds to the 10-dimensional constraint. However, you can see that if lambda is non-zero, then you can solve this equation for lambda A, B, C, D. It just gives lambda A, B, C, D is minus 1 over lambda A, B, lambda C, D.
What lambda
ABCD?
With four indices, you only find.
Oh,
the epsilon tensor contracted with lambda A?
Yeah, that was, yeah, I'm sorry, different notation. Yeah, so I can solve lambda E.
I mean, the epsilon only contracts the second part of the parental.
Yeah, I defined lambda with 4 as being epsilon times the lambda with 1. So now, yeah, here it just contracts the, and here too is the, now this I can write differently, right? How should I write? Yeah, if I define lambda with 4, it would be in epsilon times the, lambda with 1. Then in that notation, you can see immediately that if I plug this solution here, then the total antisymmetrization with this epsilon will give automatically 0. So once I solve the first equation for lambda different from 0, the second equation is automatically satisfied. And so lambda and lambda AB are in my 11 coordinates locally. And so if lambda is different from 0, I can write it in terms of a field phi, like this, e to the phi over 2. And then let me parameterize lambda AB and then the lambda with 4 minus will be, for example, lambda 1 is U2, 3, U4, 5. And similarly for the other lambdas with one index, so lambda 1, lambda 5. And then if I do a change of coordinate, for example, if I go from the patch where the component plus 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 is 0 to the patch where plus 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 minus minus, so U for 5 is non-zero, then I get some change of coordinates and phi tilde is shifted by log of U4, 5. And then there are some other transformations for the U tilde ij from ij 1, 2, 3, which are more complicated, but I am not going to use them. Because the point of this exercise now is to see for this change of coordinates, one can compute this cocycle here to see if the gluing can be done consistently, and the computation is a bit long because I would also need another change of coordinates because I want a triple overlap. Okay, it's not extremely difficult. Let's say U was the original patch. Then I have this patch U for 5. And then I have another patch U 3, 5. For example, then you can evaluate psi. Turns out to be d log U for 5 wedge d log U 3, 5. Notice that this is well defined because I'm in the triple overlap. It means that both U45 and U35 are different from zero. Now, what does it mean for this to be a zero in the cohomology? It means that it must be a difference of two cycles which are well defined pairwise in the two overlaps. So it has to be it has to be of the form psi 1 2 minus psi 1 3 plus psi 2 3, where this refers to the first and second patch and so on. And you can check that this can be done if you can write, let me call it not psi b, is a one cocycle, so that this means that psi is the co-boundary of b, and this b, for example, from the patch 1, 2, from these two, can be written as d phi tilde plug in this this transformation formulas and you compute for all the other intersection, you will find exactly psi. But the main point here is that this d phi has to be well defined, and phi was parameterizing lambda, so phi well defined means lambda different from zero. So basically the bottom line is that this is not a co-boundary if you cannot define d phi, that is if you include the origin of the space, and so the theory is only well defined in the space if the origin is not included. Now this is
there any special significance to the subspace where the lambda a is equal to zero, where the vector lambda a?
All of them are zero. Yes. So it's a big subspace.
Yeah, that's a big subspace. Anything special? Well, the reason I'm asking is that when that happens, when the condition that all the lambda a's are equal to zero, but lambda is different from zero, are precisely the Fluker relations for the u's to be actually the coordinates of a Grassmannian. So that subspace, the whole space looks like a little Grassmannian. I don't know, it's just a trivial observation.
So it means that you can decompose the Prespino space in Grassmannians as a unit?
That subspace becomes isomorphic for Grassmannian.
Okay.
For Grassmannian of two planes in five dimensions.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I don't know if it has any significance.
Not the time.
Yeah.
I don't know. Maybe there is some.
Is it possible to write the metric in this coordinates, like phi and this use?
Which metric?
For this space.
You can write a metric, but the whole point here is not to write the usual sigma model with a metric, because you cannot attribute a physical meaning to the metric on this auxiliary space. It's also last time I was talking about the analogy with the twister construction in four dimensions, and there it's the same. You start from a space in four dimensions which has a metric, but when you construct the twister space, the important structure on the twister space is the complex structure, is not the metric. So having done this work, we can also take advantage of it to to write the currents. Remember last time I wrote the Lorentz currents in the pre-spinor sector. Which are naively covariant, but again, yeah, you might question because of the constraint if they are really well defined. Now here, you in this formalism, you can do it. You go into a patch, and locally you have these coordinates. You have phi, and let's call p is conjugate momentum, and then you have uab, the local coordinates, and vab are the conjugate momenta, and then you can write the Lorentz currents now decomposes NAD with up indices, with down indices, and with one index up and one down. And you can write some expressions. You can see that they get some corrections. So naively you just write this as for NAB, but you find that you need some corrections to make them well defined. And then these two has some expected terms. This was NAB. A term which is looks like V U times U, and then so these are the SO10 currents. I remember that the Pure-Spinor space is SO10 modified times C, but now we have to say C star because we understood that this corresponds to the origin, which is the singularity and has to be removed. And there is an additional current which generates the rotation in C star, which is identified with the ghost number when you in the string theory. So this turns out to be P plus 2 phi. Now, when you compute the algebra of these currents, it turns out that they satisfy Kac-Moody algebra. This J corresponds to a U1 algebra with level minus 4. And this SO10 has level K minus 3. Which actually can be generalized to, this could be done in any dimension actually. If you write SO to n mod un times C star, if you wanted to do this in a higher dimension, this would still be minus 4. This would become 2 minus n. And with the currents, you can then write the stress energy tensor in the Sugawara form as a product of the linears of the currents. So this would be K plus the level plus the Coxeter number of the group times the product of the currents. Term DJ, which basically was this improvement term coming from the holomorphic form that I said before. From this you can compute then the OP of T with T and compute the central charge, and you find the expected result, which is which is 22 in if n equal 5. So only in 10 dimensions, it gives the correct central charge as expected. Now this factor of 8 here, this relative factor of 8 between this and this is significant, because if you write the holomorphic top form in this space, this turns out to be e to the 4 phi d phi wedge, the product of the du ab. So, and that means that with respect to the U1 current, this form has weight 8, because phi carries weight 2. So you can see that lambda carries weight 1 with respect to the charge, so it's correct, identified as the Gauss number. But the measure has Gauss number 8, so it means this can be understood as a Gauss number anomaly, which is which is 8, and if we compare it to the naive measure, if you could write something like the 11 lambda, because after all there are 11 lambdas to integrate over, then this is roughly something like the 11 lambda over lambda cube. And this is the origin of these 3 lambdas insertions that you need in the amplitude, is to compensate this 3 lambda. So this more or less explains the 3-level amplitude prescription. But to go to higher level, we need something more. In the Ramon-Nemes-Schwarz formalism, you know that for higher loop amplitudes, you are going to need insertions of the big hosts. You cannot avoid that. So what we want to do is to construct a big host in this formalism. And it turns out it's not so easy. It has taken many years for people to find it. You can try to define it by requiring that the stress energy tensor is the Q, is the BRST transformation of B. And then B squared has to be 0 in the sense of the OP. So these are the 2 properties you require, and then you can use this as an insertion in the amplitudes. And then, of course, you want it to be globally defined on the Pierre-Spinor spaces. And there is no field which satisfies all these requirements, so something has to give. You can try to give up the condition that is globally defined on the Pierre-Spinor space, and so patch-wise you can construct it, but then you will not be able to build it, to glue it. Now the latest improvement due to Berkowitz and Nekrasov was to say, okay, maybe it's not necessary to really have it globally defined. We can construct it as a sum of Bn, where n is a cocycle in Czech cohomology. So there is a B0, which is globally defined, so it's a 0 cocycle. Then there is B1, which is a 1 chain, so it's the B2, and so on. And then we require that delta B is 0 as a sum of different chains of different degree, so that delta B0 is 0, delta B1 is delta B0 is B1, and so on. And of course, because the number of patches is finite, this is inevitably going to stop at some point. It turns out that it stops at n equal 3, so it just sum of 0 to 3. And the easier description, which is more in field theoretic spirit and it's easier to use, is to use the relation between Czech cohomology and Dolbol cohomology, which is you introduce a del bar operator and a set of auxiliary fields, such that the cohomology of this operator is equivalent to the Czech cohomology. And this is done as follows. You introduce basically the anti-holomorphic parts of the fields, because classically the relation is just that the Czech cohomology on the space of holomorphic J forms is the same as the Dolbor cohomology of I, of anti-holomorphic. So the index in Czech cohomology can be traded for an anti-holomorphic form index. And so you need anti-holomorphic objects, lambda bar, with this conjugate W bar. And actually, you need more. You need also another field R with its conjugate momentum S. And we define this to have Gauss number 0 and this to have Gauss number minus 1. These are anti-Gauss. And that bar is defined as these are all spinors. These are commuting and these are anti-commuting. So commuting, anti-commuting. W bar alpha. Then the BRST operator has to be augmented. So the non-minimal is called the non-minimal formalism when you add these fields. Is supplemented to add this this cohomology. There is no cohomology carried by itself from these new fields, which means that you can still, when you define the vertex operators, you can still use the old form. It's not necessary to necessarily include all the expansion in terms of the new fields, because they will not carry any new degrees of freedom. I could show that, but since I'm short on time. Now, the mapping between this and this is very simple. You choose, if you have your patches U alpha, you choose a function rho alpha, which is defined as, where this is the component of lambda, which is not vanishing in this patch. I forgot to say that the non-minimal fields also satisfy the pure spinor constraint. And also gamma R is orthogonal to lambda bar. In some sense, R should be thought of as living in the tangent space to the pure spinor space of this second copy. And then this is sum of lambda bar lambda. And this is 0 out of U alpha. So this is called the partition of unity. If you sum over all patches, this is identically 1. And then if you have a check chain cochain, which is something defined on the overlap of n patches, this is mapped to with the anti-holomorphic N form in this way. So there is no D bar here, and this is summed over all permutations of the alphas. Now when you take this derivative D bar, you see that you're going to get expressions like 1 over lambda bar lambda. So in this formalism, it's essential that you consider operators that have singularities of this form. But there is a problem, and the problem is that if you allow these operators, then it would seem that there is an operator xi, which can be written as follows. It's lambda bar theta divided lambda, lambda bar, plus r times theta. What is special about this operator is that q psi is 1. Now, of course, if you have such an operator, it's very bad news, because it means that the cohomology is trivial. Every q closed operator, if q u is equal to 0, then you have u is q of psi u, and so every closed operator is exact, so there is no cohomology and we cannot find the S-spectrum. So the way out is to say that, okay, you have to allow denominators of the form 1 over lambda bar lambda, but not any possible denominator. So if you expand this, taking advantage of the fact that this is fermionic, this is a sum over lambda bar theta . And this sum goes up to 11, because r has the same number of dimensions as lambda. So roughly, you allow only singularities that are 1 over lambda bar lambda to the 11, and not higher. So this eliminates this operator from the cohomology, while still keeping the big host. And the point of this construction was to have a big host. And now you can find it. Where can I write it? The expression is a bit complicated. It starts as so it's an object of ghost number minus 1. Okay, notice that this lambda bar is anti-holomorphic in target space, but from the worksheet point of view, it's still a left-moving field. This lives in the same sector as the other one. And then there are objects with lambda bar lambda and some numerators. This is something like lambda bar times d, then at order lambda bar squared, there is something like d gamma d, and so on, and it goes up to lambda lambda bar to the fourth. The point of having this is to see what happens with the when you're going to have insertions of B, and you have to integrate all the zero modes of, there are many many new fields which have many fermionic zero modes which you are going to saturate if you want to have a non-vanishing amplitude. So first of all, now if you look at the measure, no? As I said, in the for the pure spin or omega, lambda, the measure was roughly something like the 11 lambda over lambda cube, so something of ghost number 8. And there are 11 lambda has 11 zero modes, and its conjugate W has 11 in a one form in a surface of genus G, holomorphic one form has 11G zero modes. So on a surface of genus G, we can write that the integral d lambda dw is going to be proportional to omega to 1 minus g. So this gives the correct counting. And for the new fields that we also have to integrate over the lambda bar, dw bar, dr, and ds. So all these have many zero modes. And so again, this is going to be proportional to something to the power of 1 minus g, simply again because there is a scalar field and its conjugate momentum always gives something proportional to 1 minus g. And this omega bar can now be defined simply as the, because as I said, r lives in the tangent space of lambda, this measure is always well defined, there is no problem, it's a canonically defined measure of Ghost number minus 11. So if you put together omega and omega bar, now the Ghost number anomaly turns out to be minus 3. So the Ghost number is minus 3 times 1 minus g. And then you can write the formula which has the correct Ghost number anomaly for the amplitude, just as you would do in normal string theory. You integrate over the modular space of Riemann surfaces with the R3G minus 3 moduli and over the insertions, positions. Then there is the number of insertions of the big hosts, which you can put more or less at arbitrary points. So this is from I to 3G minus 3. And then you write all the all the operators are now put in the unintegrated picture. These are spin 1-1 objects for the closed string, such that Q of integral of dz is going to be 0. Now this bracket, of course, denotes the integration, the functional integration. So for the 0 modes now, formally we have a well-defined procedure to integrate. But still formally, I mean, there is a number of zero modes, fermionic zero modes and bosonic zero modes. These bosonic zero modes are still going to be, are going potentially to give divergences because, again, it's a non-compact space. But this can be cured very simply by inserting a cutoff in the form of a BRST invariant fermion. So this, of course, is 1 plus Q exact terms. It is not contributes to the amplitude. And you can choose a chi in such a way that the bosonic zero modes are exponentially suppressed. So for a particular choice, for example, is lambda bar alpha, theta alpha. And then there are also the zero modes at higher genus of these spin 1 fields. And this, for this you need additional insertions, but now, OK, Okay, the main, there is still a problem with this formula. As I said, B goes like 1 over lambda bar lambda to the power 4. So when you have more than 3 insertions, which happens at genus 6 and on, you're going to exceed this bound of 1 over lambda bar lambda to the 11. And then you cannot trust this formula as it is anymore. One solution is to adopt also a regularization for this B. So there is a B depending on some cutoff epsilon, which basically amounts to inserting a shift in the pole in different. So if you have 1 over lambda bar lambda to the 12, you try to write it as a pole of lower order, but a product of shifted poles times another one, so that you have poles at different locations and each of them does not exceed the bound. But the problem is that this regularized B is a very complicated object, and so far there are no. Yeah, people are still looking for some easier way to do this. But at least up to genus 6, this is good. And this can be proved, for example, to show the non-renormalization theorems for the it's just accounting of fermionic zero modes. If you have I'm basically finished. Yeah. So if you compute the 4-point amplitude, for example, you want to compute corrections to the r to the fourth in type 2b. So you compute the 4 amplitude at genus g. And as I said, you can write it as a superspace integral. And then there are all these r and s and p zero modes to compute and so on. And then there are b 3g minus 3 insertions and mb to the fourth. And you can try to see what is the. You have to saturate all the zero modes. It turns out that the lowest order in derivative happens for a term of this form, d16 theta, theta 12 minus 2g times w to the fourth. This w, as you remember, appears in the expansion of the vertex as the alpha, w alpha, and w alpha is the Gluino field strength. Now, when you square this to have a closed string amplitude, this corresponds to r to the fourth times d to the 2g. And this, as I said, it's the lowest order in derivatives that appears, so this proves the non-renormalization of r to the fourth, namely that the derivative 2g r to the fourth only appears from a G loop, so up to D to 12, up to the fourth. This is okay. Then D to the 12 correspond to 6 loops. As I said, then the argument is subject to the subtleties of the regularization, and it's not known yet. Okay, thank you.
But you think it's possible? Is it
yeah.
The rule you're giving is algorithmic enough for a computer to do this final problem?
If one could find a regulator which...
Below six loops, I mean six loops are...
Yeah, even before six loops, there is this sky. It's not clear that, I mean, for each different computation, you may choose a different regulator which is nicer, so if one can find a universal regulator, then one could think of making algorithmic.
It's still an art.
Yeah. yeah, at 3 level you can certainly make it. Well, I mean, there are still the integrals over the worksheet to do. These are typically some at high number of points. It's hard to do the integrals. But yeah, if you can find some relations at the level of integrants, then in these four lines you need.
Can you take some, you could call it mini superspace limit?
Mini superspace?
Yeah, when you restrict to the lowering excitation on the worksheet. So we should do open string amplitudes. Can you mean that maybe we reconstruct a different formulation of super limits?
I mean, if you just consider only massless excitations, but yeah, I don't really see what restriction you have in mind. You still have all alpha prime corrections, no?
To throw them away.
To what?
To take yourself to the massless modes.
Yeah, you stick to massless modes, but you want to keep the alpha prime corrections, or
no?
I see.
So you say every loop send alpha prime to zero. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. If you are doing open string, just think of those diagonals you can use, but you have some automatically many diagonals together, maybe you need the alternative form or anything.
So what you're saying is like this explicit expression, try to take the limit.
That doesn't people consider cross-string as non-trivial background. Able to take, I think it convinces the space limit for you. It's a description of not the sexy thing.
I don't know.
Okay. No further questions. Thank you, Giuseppe, again.